Feels so right.
Do you guys remember a show that used to run like in syndication that was called like PM Magazine or P?
Yes.
I do remember.
Well, it was like, but it was always local markets, but it had half syndicated content, half like local. Like, here's what the local bands are doing, but
right. Well, they would pre-prepare a certain amount of content, and then they would send it over to the locals, and each local would have its own hosts. It was like show in a can, just add water, and they would prepare like one or two spots at the top and the bottom. And other than that, these hosts would just get in front of the camera and say, and now let's see this dog on skates in Manistee, Michigan. And it would go in, and then they would queue it up and go from there. But it was really kind of a interesting approach to doing a syndicated show.
Yeah, I don't know why that popped into my mind, but I think when we were singing that song, I was trying to remember the, you know what, I'm going to look it up, but PM Magazine, everybody. I don't know where that was.
Now, what can we learn from PM Magazine?
PM Magazine. Oh, that's amazing. So now I'm sorry. I'm reading Wikipedia about it. What an exciting start to the show. All right.
Yeah.
We're off to the races.
Hey,
guys, shall we introduce ourselves so we get past my weird blurb about PM
Magazine? Is this Webcomics Weekly?
Weekly. For the last 4 weeks, it's been weekly.
Hey.
This is like
they said it couldn't be done.
They've been saying a lot.
what if I kick it off by saying that I'm Chris Straub and I do Starslip at starslip.com and chainsawsuit at chainsawsuit.com?
That would be a nice – and then what I would do is I would come in and follow it up by saying I'm Brad Geiger and I do Evil Incorporated at evil-comic.com and I also webcomics.com.
Wow, you guys all do a lot.
Yeah.
And Scott, what do you do?
I guess I could come in and say that I'm Scott Kurtz and I draw PvP at pvponline.com.
Wow, I am humbled to be among you guys. This is amazing. no reaction at all. I thought that would get a much bigger laugh. All right, never mind. All right, I'm David, and you can type in Sheldon into Google, and that's what I do. All right, so this is a
son of a bitch.
this is Webcomics Weekly, which we're no longer the trifecta. We've done, what is it, the quadfecta? How do you say the next one? We've done four in a row.
Yeah, I think, I don't think there's a word for it. We are breaking new ground.
We have become those webcomicers that are like, bam, 10 updates in a row, guys.
Yes, we're on. Months, we did after it. Months of podcrastinating, we're back on the horse.
Oh, come on.
Oh God damn it.
Stop saying that. Nobody is ever going to use that.
No. God damn it, Hinky. That is never going to catch on. Hey, I would like to open this podcast with some commentary on some of the feedback we received from the last four episodes. The last 4 hours of free content that we've provided for you jackals.
You know, I know what you're going to say, and am I just being thin-skinned, or is there more hating going on than
it's
there was the last time we did this podcast?
Well, my favorite so far is the guy that Twittered, if you guys want to get back into Webcomics Weekly, you can, but I know they're just doing it because webcomics.com subscriptions are going to expire and they're just pushing for those resubscriptions. And then as soon as that's done, bye-bye Webcomics Weekly. Come on.
Enjoy it while it lasts. Yeah, that was a particularly bizarre comment. Because maybe this is a good place to put it, put this information. There is no connection between Webcomics Weekly podcast and webcomics.com other than the fact that obviously I'm intensely involved with both.
Well, I mean, you're a connection, Brad, so you're already lying to the people.
But let me put it this way. Webcomics.com members don't get special access to the podcast. They don't get anything that anyone else doesn't get. The podcast is completely a separate entity. It's a separate offering.
Well, Brad's too polite to say it, but I can say it. Chris and I haven't done a lick of work on webcomics.com and aren't involved in the slightest.
This
and,
is basically the only place you can hear from us.
none of these three guys will say it, so let me say it. Let's hypothetically assume that we are doing 5 or 6 episodes of Webcomics Weekly to promote resubscribing. You're welcome! Enjoy your free podcast, have a sip of your coffee, and go on with your day.
Let's say we are promoting webcomics.com. We have done a horrible job of it on these last podcasts.
That's a better way to put it.
We've hardly ever brought it up.
Yeah. That's another good point. Also, I would like to comment or respond to everyone who's made some kind of comment about how our last three shows really indicate how out of touch we've become with the struggling cartoonist. And I don't want to speak for the rest of my co-hosts, but let me respond to those people saying that. Kitten, there is nothing in your world of trying to get No Shoes for Tuesday off the ground that Scotty K can't wrap his brain around, okay? Been there, done that. Got the t-shirt.
Got a bunch of t-shirts.
Did it before it had a name. In fact, I probably named it, and it didn't happen 300 years ago, okay? I'm not Nicodemus at the bottom of the Secret of Nim. This was like 5 years ago that I was doing that.
Hold on. We got to stop. That's two shows in a row you've referenced the Secret of Nim. Did you watch that recently?
It's been running on.
I have a fan site, and and I finally started getting that mailing list out again.
I'm finally moderating the chat room again. We're totally.
I've officially become my father, where I just cannot keep track of what reference I've used in what conversation.
Well, look, I brought it up on the other podcast where I'm like, who's got to deal with worrying about whether or not they're getting invited to a con and airfare, afforded them? Like, yeah, that's tough. I know that's not something you jump on in the first year, and it's taken 10 years to get to that. But Scott, you had a good comment about the Actor's Studio. I think would be good to bring up now.
Oh yeah, when I turn on Inside the Actor's Studio and Kevin Spacey's on there, I want to hear about the details of what's going on in his world. I'm not going to be like, well, this guy just can't relate to the struggling actor.
Well, yeah, you know? yeah. And here's the fundamental reason why we stopped, though, is because we can't forever talk about, hey, what did you do the first week you launch a strip? I mean, that only interests us up to a point, you know, and then you got to keep talking about what's current in your life, you know.
And this also needs to be said, and I think probably most of the people out there listening are smart enough to have already made this connection, but for the small number that haven't, a lot of these people that are making these comments have an axe to grind. They're either working on they're working on another podcast that they think is in competition, or they're working on some kind of project that they're in competition or maybe have something to fear from what we do. A lot of these people have an axe to grind.
Haven't this whole time – now this show's getting meta. But like, haven't this whole time, haven't we said that the field is big enough?
Yeah.
I think that it's a lot more about perceived competition than an actual – threat or
along those lines, Chris, I think if we're all honest about it, we've gotten way more positive feedback by just coming back than any negative. I mean, most people are incredibly excited that the show's back again. At least
I'm excited, and I didn't realize this was just an ad for webcomics.com. So I was the last to know. But if you need me to be more, you know, on message with that, I can jump on top of that.
A lot of people are excited. I know our shareholders at webcomics.com.
But listen, I've been really following the boards at webcomics.com and a lot of chatter over at webcomics.com. By the way, where can I find webcomics.com, Brad?
You go to http://www.bit.ly.
Bit.ly, they give you the Bit.ly leaf link.
Yeah. When those Libyan links all die, you're in trouble with that one.
You're like, well, you know what? Let me. Okay, actually, here's my home phone number. If you call, you can get it.
Anyway, but yeah, like to me, if there was a podcast, just to go back to this point, if there was a podcast where it was Neil Gaiman and Jeff Smith sitting and talking around the problems that they're facing, my God, that's what I want to listen to. You always want to listen to two stages ahead of you in the game to see what problems you should be thinking about, how you should be anticipating. I mean, that's really where you want to be mentally. You don't want to be thinking about, I don't know, you always want to be, that it's that old stupid saying, if you want to be reaching for the stars, because then you'll hit the moon, you know?
Yeah, so unless you're Mike, Jerry, Randall Monroe, anyone at Zapatico, shut the fuck up and pay attention.
I want to do a podcast. Like, this podcast is aimed at people who are not at this level yet. I want to do a podcast aimed at people who are our level, where I can just be like, what do we do next? I don't know what to do.
No, you know what would be good? We should, Chris, do a podcast that's just for Mike and Jerry. And it's like, how to diversify your international holdings when you're like, Scott, that's what we should do. We should shoot one for the next level. All right. Let's say you're
Robert. It's a podcast about us asking them.
What would the podcast be?
For the answer.
Yeah.
If you guys
Today
are
we're
listening,
gonna discuss how to properly anchor your boats.
Yeah. do you want to own a jet, or do you want to do one of those timeshare things where you get the jet at any time you want, but you have to call ahead by a day?
Oh no, I can't stand the idea of another man in my jet. Just buy it. The peace of mind alone.
Oh my god, why did that kill me? I can't, you know, there's been another fanny on this seat. I don't understand.
We got some response to our last topic from last week. Is it truly impossible to find good help?
Oh, interesting.
Wait, you really got that response?
No, that's a joke.
Let's have it, Brad.
That's an attempt at a joke. Sky Mall.
I totally missed it. Ah.
Come on, David.
Come on, Brad. You got to get a little more. Even like our topic last week, blood diamonds. How do you avoid them?
And how do you clean the blood off your blood diamonds?
Brad,
I actually saw an ad for chocolate diamonds.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a real thing. But then when they showed a picture of them, they look kind of reddish. And I'm like, why don't they just call them like rose diamonds or something?
You can't call them a blood diamond, though.
They're just chocolate. Is chocolate diamond a euphemism so you don't have to say it was a blood diamond?
Chocolate diamond. That sounds like a sex thing, so never mind.
Yeah.
Chocolate diamond.
Chocolate diamond sounds like a sex thing. Oh, man, it was amazing. We even did the chocolate diamond.
And she gave me a chocolate diamond.
Whoa, you need to marry that girl.
And then one person's like, wait, what's a chocolate diamond? And the rest of the room is just smiling and doing the slow.
I've had a chocolate diamond before. There's nothing sexual about it. A chocolate diamond is where you have to poop so bad, but there's no available place to go. And you're stuck with this thing in your
heat and pressure of the core.
Yeah, until it just...
Can I tell you, this is the perfect part to cue our music to go out, and we just go out on that.
And then when you finally do get to a toilet, you just got this rock that's clearly bigger than the diameter of your sphincter. And that's a chocolate diamond.
Scott, I was at there. When you have to go to the bathroom and just stop, and then you let that imagination drift.
Oh.
That's just good writing.
Well, we can edit it in post. We'll edit it in post.
Yeah, you know what? We'll introduce a beat there.
We'll fix it in post. We'll do it live.
We'll cut it in camera.
I'll fix it. We'll do it live.
Well, yeah, we'll take it again. And then Scott just does the whole joke over again. We don't edit.
What does that mean to play us out?
It was a hard piece of poop in my butt.
You're just like, I'm trying to tell the story. Why didn't they let me say it?
But seriously, though, what are we going to talk about today? Chris, you got an interesting email.
I had two interesting emails that were strangely timed. I got them both last night from two different people. And they both said, you know, I appreciate your work and all that. I was wondering if you could take some time and critique my strip because it's been going for... I don't know. The two people have said between 6 months and a year. And I think both of them made a point to say, I've been very consistent with my updates. I have been getting, I mean, I haven't been dogging it. I've been doing it for real. And it's been about a year. And should I quit? Should I stop? Like, is it worth continuing?
Bull.
And could you take a look at them and let me know. And I was like, oh, I wrote one guy back and said, I need a little time to mull it over. I'm not going to just dash over to his website for 30 seconds and go, here's your problem. Too sloppy, and I don't know what the hell's going on, and yes, quit. Like, how do you – so I don't know how to answer that.
But Chris, in all fairness, though, you do that to me almost every day in email.
Unsolicited.
Too sloppy. I don't understand what's going on in panel two. This is crap
over here.
There's
no reason the duck should talk. I know that it's supposed to be beyond that in strip continuity, but there was no reason.
I got two words for you. Editing. You need it. It doesn't even work.
I got two words for you. You need to edit your comic strip, David. I think
that's a better construction of that.
Yeah, pick any two.
Yeah, there you go.
Can I take a crack at that? If you are asking someone that question, and if you're actually prepared to quit when one person tells you that they think that it's time for you to quit, then the answer is yes. You should quit.
Oh, really? That's an interesting.
Yeah, because if you don't have more fire in your belly than that, you're not going to make it.
Ah, that's interesting. That's sort of like if you think you have a thinking problem, then you do.
Yeah, I mean, Scott has given me the which tells me that he's got a different opinion. But
well, I'll come down strong on this because we've talked about this before in relation to critiquing in general, and I think we did a whole podcast about this once where I talked about how I'm anti
vehemently,
yeah, and I do not like giving critiques. I do not like being asked for critiques. I don't want. And to me, the problem with that entire question, Chris, is that the onus is being put on you when it should be entirely an artist self-driven question and answer. You know, like you cannot put the responsibility of, hey, Chris, should I marry this woman or should I not marry this woman on someone else? You know, like that.
Chris, I've been with her for 5 years. We've been to therapy. Should I divorce my wife?
Yeah, I mean, any important decision of your life should be – I mean, granted, you consult with friends, family, all that sort of stuff. I don't want to sound like it has to be completely individual, but you cannot put that weight onto another artist of solve my problem, solve my life, solve what's going wrong for me. That's ultimately a central question to you being an artist is this working? Is the audience getting the response? And most importantly, am I getting the response in terms of my satisfaction with my own work? Because ultimately, if that's the case, you'll keep powering through. Like Brad said, you'll have the fire in the belly and you'll keep working on it for years and years until it clicks.
And that's not to say if Chris said, you know, there's a difference between obstinance and persistence. In other words, if Chris said, you know, you really need to brush up on the way you present a joke, for example, you need to think about more about the setup and how you're presenting that. You're not really following through, blah, blah, blah. You can take that advice.
Well, that's just a straight up critique. That's not do I give up? Do I stop?
Right. But when
that's
it,
like, what
it
could
comes
I do better?
To, yeah. Yeah. But when it comes to I'm all in, either you say I'm in or I'm going to shut things down tomorrow. I'm ready to quit. If you tell me it's time to quit, then it's time to quit.
Yeah, I agree with that. So then let's generalize the question from critiques. How do you know it's time to quit? I think, and Scott and I, we talked about it a little bit this morning. It's like, what do you want the strip to be doing for you? And, you know, if you are not satisfied with or you're not feeling it, then yeah, quit. Or yeah, retool it, especially if you're only a year in.
Or do it for the enjoyment of doing it, for the creative fulfillment that it gives you and for the personal enjoyment, and look back in a couple of years and see if you haven't improved and see if you haven't gotten to a different place. And if all you got out of it was creative enjoyment, then that's just dandy. That's so much more than so many people would have had otherwise.
Well, you need to get it out of that.
I'm in a really horrible, horrible place with all of this. I am.
I can tell you're
I'm ready to tell all of you to shut up.
No, I am fed up with this because I hate to see it happen in a community that I guess I'm closest to, but I'm trying to meter my words because I feel like I've been rambling in the last couple of podcasts. But this email that they sent Chris is not a person that really is considering quitting. Okay, this is a person who is reaching out for from Chris what a lot of these cartoonists have built this construct they've built. Because the real question and the real thing that's happening, I think, here is a question is being posed to everyone in web comics. And the question is, now that it's not special to have a comic on the web anymore, what's so important about what you do?
That's a great general question.
And that is what every web cartoonist right now is facing. Because it used to be that just having a comic on the web made you special. Because not everybody was doing it. But I was telling Brad the other day that the days of getting a haircut and the barber asking you, so what do you do for a living? And you say, I'm a cartoonist. And they say, oh, where can I read it? Is it in the newspaper? Is going away. Pretty soon it'll be, what do you do for a living? I'm a cartoonist. Oh, what's your website?
Right. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, like that's Seth. I always pronounce his last name. I don't even know how to pronounce it. Is it Seth Godin? Seth Godin? Seth Godin?
Seth Godin. Yeah,
Seth McFarlane, I think.
No, but he had a great blog post.
You're way off.
Oh, boy, you are not even close. He had a great blog post, I think, that really crystallized that thought. And I actually looked it up. So he said in a recent blog post that the law of the internet is simple. Either you do something I can't do myself or get from someone else, or I pay you less than you'd like. And that crystallizes that idea that having a webcomic alone isn't special anymore.
Well, he's talking about how when the only way to have a career as an independent artist was to go through one of these large publishers, there wasn't as much competition necessarily. But now when all you have to do is have a – you know, when you take every industry, not just the music industry, but every industry.
Right.
And you see all of these independent creative people now that exist because they can.
Mm-hmm.
Now suddenly it's more important for your work to really stand out. There's awesome product everywhere. What makes yours different?
Well, that's what I mean too. And it's not only a sense like he was framing it in the sense of media companies and what do you offer me that I can't do for myself, but it's also true broadly speaking. For look, the format and the medium completely levels the playing field to the point of look, there's 10,000 musicians online, there's 10,000 cartoonists online, there's 10,000 blogs online. How do you distinguish yourself? What level of quality do you bring to it?
And what's happening right now in the webcomics community is since these people are unable to distinguish themselves with their work, what they're doing is trying to distinguish themselves in other ways, like my post count on a forum, or I've reached my 200th strip, or I've created an award that I'm now a part of, or I've made the top of a web list, or I contribute to this new free website where I help other creators improve their work.
Well,
you know,
let me temper your words because I mean, I agree with you, but it's the idea that like there's nothing innately wrong with these metrics. It's just that to a point, they are meaningful. And when we are talking about something that's different, we're not talking about from those. And
well,
nobody can argue
lie.
Those with you.
That's the big lie, Chris. And that's where I get frustrated. Is because if you say to someone who's succeeding, and by succeeding I mean they're making a lot of money, and now that's going to immediately pop up some red flags in our audience. I know people are listening right now and saying, well, there's other measures of success other than how much money you earn. I agree. If your measure of success is your creative fulfillment, then you're not listening to this podcast because this podcast has never been about that. And to be honest, I think the percentage of people in the 10 years, 12, 13 years I've been doing this, I've met one person who was in it for some kind of cathartic creative fulfillment.
Really?
And I've met one person.
You mean purely where they couldn't
purely
care less
purely
about the
Purely where
money.
They don't care about the money or the traffic. They just want to really improve their work.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've met one. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a lot of people that say that they care about other measures of success. But secretly and deeply, their desire is to be a professional cartoonist.
You know what? I actually will agree with you. And I'll agree with you because I actually noticed it for the first time where it was someone where I was like, all right, I believe them that they're genuinely in it for just the joy of it. There was a forum post where it was like, I'm a 62-year-old woman who's earned a lot of money in my professional life, and now I just want to do this for the joy of it. And I was like, you know what? I actually believe you when you frame it that way.
Right. Brad, remember that girl we met at New York Comic Con that came to get critiqued at the webcomics seminar thing?
Yes, yes. And her work was actually really, really good.
It was really interesting, and it looked like that New Yorker cartoonist.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And every time we would talk to her about anything relating towards, well, if you want this to be marketable, she'd be like, well, I don't want it to be marketable. I just want to get my thoughts out. She was very concerned about having the right tools to express her thoughts.
Right. Yeah. And she had brought in like this little, was it a moleskin type sketchbook? It was just a small little sketchbook, and it was crammed with all this stuff. And you could tell there was just all of these thoughts in her head trying to get out.
We were saying to her, you know, you really should work on bigger paper so it's easier to reproduce. And she goes, well, I'm not so concerned about reproducing it. And then
she was so polite about it.
And I smiled at her and I said, you know what's funny is that you're so non-concerned. What's the word I'm looking for? Unconcerned?
Yeah.
Sure.
You're so unconcerned with this ever being marketable, and you're focusing so much on just – on just the creative aspect and the fulfillment of this, that I think that in the end you'll have a product that a lot of people will like. That's the irony. Because you're not trying for that. Well, yeah. But anyway, how many people
are in that position where you hear about somebody who's, you know, nascent, they're really picking up and they're like, okay, I put my stuff, you know, like I put my stuff on LiveJournal, I put my stuff wherever on this website. Well, where's your ads? Where's your blog below it? And they're like, what is that? I don't care. Why would I do that? I just want to make work. Did you realize that your work is being read by 100,000 people? You know, no, yeah. I didn't, because
the last person that I know that was like that was Kate Beaton. She had a LiveJournal website. We were like, you know, you should really make a real website. Everyone was like, come on. She's like, I don't know. I don't think anyone's reading this. But it's so funny.
That was the exact same thought I had, that Kate really, because the work came first. Yeah.
Yeah. To not derail this thread, to get back to that email Chris got, is what's happening is you have a cartoonist that's not succeeding or not getting the traction he wants, and then he finds another cartoonist not getting the traction that he wants, and then they find another cartoonist not getting the traction that she wants, and they all each talk about each other and share their struggles, and then they prop each other up, and then they construct these metrics by which to congratulate each other. Like, I reached 100 blog posts. I've top of this list. I've made this award. And now they start seeking these things. And it's really easy to get off track. But when someone emails Chris and says, you know, should I quit? He doesn't want to quit. He's not interested in quitting. He's not interested in whether or not Chris thinks he should quit. Because if Chris goes, yes, absolutely, you should quit, he is going to then email somebody else the same question.
You're saying that they're fishing.
Or he's going to post a long, angry post about Chris somewhere.
Right.
So you're a real joke.
You're saying it's the equivalent of two people standing next to each other and looking into a mirror, and one of them says, I'm ugly, hoping the other one says, no, you're pretty.
Right.
That kind of thing.
Exactly.
Right. You're
exactly.
Begging. Yeah, you're fishing.
He's fishing. And what he's looking for is for Chris to offer him. He's looking to Chris what a lot of cartoonists are looking for in these communities or these constructs.
This economy in these troubled times.
And there's this weird caste system that's being constructed. And the last time I saw it was in independent or in alternative comics in the 90s. But there's all these social constructs that are being built right now because it's less special to just have a cartoon on the web. And someone is reaching out to Chris right now and inviting him into this construct. Like, should I quit? And then Chris goes, no, your stuff's really good. And he's like, but I'm not getting any traction. Chris is like, well, I don't understand. I mean, this stuff's fantastic. And then he's like, well, I appreciate it. I guess I'll keep trying. And then he can post on his website, you know, Chris really likes my stuff. I wish it was getting, you know, and then.
And maybe Chris could tell me that magic HTML code that I put in my site that makes it extremely popular.
Oh, you don't know.
Oh, by the way, Chris, can you email me that?
No problem.
I took it out of one of my files, and now I...
It's called SEO. It's called the X Factor, you doofus.
The better response would have been, it's called doing better work, Kellett. That's what it is.
Yeah, that's what you need.
It's called SEO, and for $47, I can give you a PDF that'll tell you how to master that shit.
Well, I can speak to... God, that got you guys. I don't know why it hit me.
We were just trying to keep you from talking. It's our only...
You've said quite enough. It's why we always espouse doing what you enjoy first, because at least you get that out of it when it hasn't gotten anywhere. I mean, I'm not going to speak specifics about the guys who wrote me, but it's like, where was I a year into doing webcomics? Well, that was year one of Checkerboard Nightmare, and it was horrible. And I wasn't doing it for readers anyway At the time, I had like, I don't know, 300-400 readers maximum, and I was just enjoying it.
Right.
I mean, if I was coming at it from the direction of should I keep going, I would have quit instantly. You know, right. I'm not selling anything.
It's so odd.
No, that's why I. This is why I get mad about the whole thing. Is because you have to. You're externally looking for someone else to give you a fire internally. That's ultimately what they're looking for. Is that. Like in the early years of Sheldon, like Sheldon didn't make me any money for 5 years, 4 years, 6 years, somewhere in that ballpark. I mean, that's a lot of time to be doing a 7 day a week strip for no money, you know? And the odds are like I do a family friendly strip. Well, you tell me, what are the odds of making a family friendly strip work online? You know, like if I had asked anybody, they would have been like, I don't know. I don't know if you can make that work. But that's what I wanted to do. And so, like, you have to want to plow through it regardless of what people are telling you, not because of what people are telling you, you know?
I can remember multiple times in my life at different stages and ages where people have either said directly to me or commented to each other, well, it's an interesting hobby and it's neat that he likes it and he's really good at it, but he's going to hit this milestone and then he'll have to quit. You know, like, well, he'll grow out of it. And then it was in college, I had a friend who said, look, you know, you only have 3 more years of college left, then you're just going to have to get a job. And then, you know, it's going to be time to stop trying to be a cartoonist and you're going to have to actually get a job because your parents aren't going to support you anymore. And then it was, well, you know, you're married now and your wife's let you do this, but eventually you'll have a kid and then you won't have any time and you'll have to give this up. And those all marked moments where other people that I knew that were cartoonists did quit. And I would always agree. I would always say, yeah, you know, I'll get to college and I'll have to focus on studies and I won't worry about cartoons anymore. And then I would say, yeah, I'll graduate and I'll have to get a job and then I won't have time to worry about this anymore. But I was thinking to myself, I'll never quit.
Right.
I mean, my first major in college was art education because my thought process on it was not you'd make a good teacher, which is what my mother thought, because she would say, you'll make a great teacher. Oh, you'll make a good teacher. My thought was I can work as a teacher for the school year, and then I have all summer to try to become a cartoonist.
Oh, yeah. I've had the same thought that it would be great to be a teacher just to have summers to do conventions. I mean, thinking about it from this side of it, of the perspective that we have now.
Well, do you guys ever have dreams where the dream is you're back working a day job and you have to figure out what happened?
No.
No, I haven't. I had those dreams where I'm still in college.
Although, you know what? This is going to sound so stupid, but I did have a daydream the other day that I was back working at Mattel because, and you're going to laugh when I say this, because around Christmas at Mattel, everybody would bring in all these baked goods all the time. And I was like, oh, it was constant party. There's another cake in the thing, in the office kitchen today. And like, I miss that. It's so stupid that's what I miss about working for a company. It's like, hey, people brought in cookies. People brought in brownies. I'm such a child when it comes to that sort of stuff.
Oh, I.
You had a dream about snacks.
Yeah, basically, I didn't want to buy my own goddamn brownies, but here I am, like, oh, I like it when they're free.
I'll have dreams where I'm back at my tech support job, and I'm saying they're like, come on, let's get these computers set up, and I'm like, hey, what happened to PvP though? Why am I back here? And they're like, well, you know, it didn't work out. I'm like, but did I burn bridges or did the money just stop coming in? Did I have to get the day job? And they're like, well, you know, and I'm like. It's usually a supervisor or a coworker, and I'm saying, well, maybe I can rebuild it. And they say, well, you can worry about that when you get home. You know, you can't worry about that now.
Oh, wow.
And honestly, I wonder if the cartooning stuff I'm doing now, if it ever got to the point where it wasn't bringing in enough money and I had to get a day job again, would I quit? Would I keep? I can't imagine a day where I didn't at least
try
in my brain write a story or come up with something new for a character to do. I can't imagine.
Maybe we should have a formal, like, if we're doing this podcast, we should have a formal intro and a disclaimer in front that says that the four of these guys have done these strips for at least 10 years, you know, and just remind, not that people are dumb, but I think that there is a capacity to forget that. Well, hell, I'm not getting anywhere, and I've been doing this for a whole year. Well, it's great, but come back 6 years from now. There's, well, you aren't going to go anywhere a year from now. You have to keep going.
We saw that when we first put the book out, though. Remember? We had the nine-month itch where people were – and it was right around 9 months.
Right.
We would get these emails that said – I've been doing this for 9 months, and I'm not selling any T-shirts yet or whatever.
I have a theory on this. I have a theory on this I'd like to offer up to you guys and tell me what you think. Do you think we had it easier because we had it harder?
I think we this is the way I've thought about it, because people are always like, well, you guys came up in a different time and it's not possible anymore. But in a way, the time that we came up, it wasn't possible at all, if you know what I mean. Like
but there was no one doing it.
That first, like, I remember in 98, 99, I was like, wait a minute, there's a way to even make money at this? Oh, I guess I could put up ads, or I guess I could, you know. I guess what I'm saying is it wasn't even really possible, so you had to figure it out. And in doing so, I don't know.
No, I think I know what you mean. Like, it's held separate from you for longer. Whereas now it's like, okay, this is my second week of my website. I got AdSense approved. I got WordPress pushing content out to blog searches everywhere. Where's the readers? How come they're not here yet?
Well, no, but like when I first self-published PvP as a comic book, I was publishing with Dorkstorm Press, and I was being advised by John Kovalik, who had already a successful comic book for 4 or 5 years. And he's like, all right, now you submit it to Diamond. Now the numbers will come in, and then you'll know how much to print. And so when the numbers came in, I said, are these good numbers? And he says, yeah, those are respectable. And I said, what are your numbers? And he goes, no, don't do that. Don't start that. And I said, what do you mean? And John said, don't compare your numbers to anybody else. You can't do that. You will drive yourself crazy. I don't compare my numbers to anyone else. Don't compare them to yours. Because if their numbers are bigger than yours, you'll be depressed. And if their numbers are lower than yours, you'll get a false sense of importance. The numbers are what the numbers are. And, you know,
everybody's circumstance is unique. Like, right, I've ran into compare. This. I've ran so, into this. Sorry, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, just let me finish my thought. But what I'm saying is, as far as webcomics are concerned, there was nothing to compare it to. It was just we had what we had. But now it's like, okay, I have my webcomic. I'm doing it for 6 months. Am I Scott yet? No.
Yeah. Well, and I, you know what? Can I pick up on that? Because this goes directly back to Chris's email, this thought, is that when – in addition to that you shouldn't be seeking this external approval from Chris or from Scott or from me or from Brad or from any cartoonist – here's the flip side of it. It doesn't make any difference to your career in the same way that it doesn't make any difference to my career right now what Chris thinks of my work or what Jeff Jacks thinks of my work or Randall Monroe thinks of my work or Jerry or Mike. You know what I mean? What matters is, can I build an audience? And for a lot of people, it's completely separate audiences. Like the Venn diagram of my audience and XKCD or Penny Arcade or Questionable Content or, you know, Savage Chickens or whatever you want to name – can be totally separate and independent and yet totally functioning. You know what I mean? It could be 50,000 completely separate readers that do not cross the Venn diagram of any of those strips. So I guess what I'm trying to say is your career, not only is your self-worth not related at all to Chris, but your career is not related at all to Chris's approval. You know? Do you get what I'm trying to say there? Like, it does not matter to me at all if even the three of you don't like my stuff. I don't give a shit. What only matters is, can I maintain and continue to grow my readership base? That's all that matters.
Well, yeah, because you're doing it for you.
Right. And you know, you have to be savvy enough to know that, like, my tastes are not perfectly Brad's tastes. My tastes are not perfectly Scott's tastes. None of those are ever going to cross. And if you're writing truly for you and it's good, the audience will find and coalesce around it. And yes, you can have little helping hands, but like I've gotten links in the past from Penny Arcade, didn't help me at all. And you know why? Because it's very different audiences. So right. they'll come, but they won't stick around. Yet I can get a link from Unshelved and suddenly have 5,000 new readers the next morning because there's a slightly better Venn diagram.
That's what I was going to say when I was interrupting Scott, was that more than once lately I've had this experience where it's like I'm talking to some other creator who I think of as, well, they're not at my level yet. They'll get there. And they're like, I can't get any traction with my ads. Like, I can never make any ad money. And I'm like, well, okay, there, little partner. how many uniques you get a day? And they're like, lately it's been like 45,000 uniques a day. And I'm like, whoa, that's like three times what I do. But for some reason, I'm able to make money off of ads and they're not. But they have that audience. So their solution is going to be different from mine.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's a whole separate discussion because, like, you know, the way I make money and the way, like, Saturday Morning Breakfast cereal makes money is totally different. Why is my doorbell ringing?
It's me, David. I brought a pie.
It's opportunity and it's knocking.
Webcomics Weekly. And just end it there. That's your way of getting out of the show.
Now I forget my point. Oh! Just that I think that's a whole different argument or conversation, I think, which is that once the audience starts coming, the strategies for monetizing it are totally different for different titles. You know,
Does that lead us into that whole secret of NIMH conversation that you've been teasing for the last two podcasts, Scott? In other words, now that it's not such a novelty to be on the web. Now that everyone's on the web, now that it's expected to be on the web, web is today what print was in 1980 or 1990. And that means that we, the web cartoonists, aren't web cartoonists anymore. We're just plain old independent cartoonists. And where does that leave us? We're back to independent comic scene in the 1990s. Is that right, Scott?
I mean, look, there's no way to say this without sounding like a complete asshole, but that's never stopped me. So when you remove all of the constructs that make you special outside of your work being unique, then you're not special anymore. If that's your problem, then you need to work on that. But you're not going to address it until you remove everything else. And listen, the first thing I do when I wake up in the morning and sit down at my computer is I surf and I check all of the comic book news sites to see what the buzz is. So I understand. And the buzz, the internet buzz, if I don't check those websites, nothing changes in my day. It's not like reading those internet buzz sites helps me create work, but I am interested in seeing what's happening with different creators and what's news and what's coming out and who said what and who's fighting with whom. And I'm not saying that you should be above all that because I hate people that say that, but you have to keep it in its proper place. And you can build up these constructs of importance around you and lose focus. And right now, those constructs are becoming even less important because and they're looking even more stupid because those constructs don't exist necessarily. They've never been interested in the mainstream media or to your mainstream audience, excuse me. So the percentage of my audience as a whole is a certain number. Then there's a subset of them that are aware of other webcomics. Okay. And then there's a subset of that group that are other webcomics, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
And so that is the smallest subset, and that's who all this is important to. And that's why I stopped posting about this on my blog. Maybe I Twitter about it still, and my Twitter has grown to the size where I have to stop Twittering about it too. But the larger subset of my audience, the biggest number, there's a large percentage of those people that don't know or care about what's happening with other cartoonists or web cartoonists. They just like PvP and they read it, and sometimes they read the blog and they move on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right. And that is the audience you need to expand, and that's what you need to focus on.
Well, and that's why I say like it should not matter for these people that are seeking out external approval from other cartoonists. The opinion doesn't matter and can't matter because ultimately that core audience is your sole and only focus in terms of building your career.
Right.
And that's why my opinion of what PvP is doesn't matter to PvP. Scott's opinion of Sheldon doesn't matter to Sheldon because ultimately we're appealing to that core audience and not to each other, you know?
Yeah, I mean, a good example is when Eric Larson was in charge of Image, he, you know, we would talk on the phone sometimes and we would discuss Image books and he would say, I don't really like that book. And I'm like, really? And he's like, yeah, it's not my cup of tea. And I said, well, then why did you approve it? And he says, oh, well, just because I don't like it doesn't mean that I don't think it'll be a great seller. I mean, I know the audience that likes that book, and I think it's going to do really well, and it has done really well. And so that's why Eric was an amazing publisher, because even though maybe a certain type of art isn't his cup of tea, he is more of a Walt Simonson type superhero guy.
Mm-hmm.
That's why when Eric Larson was publisher, all the books weren't Walt Simonson type Jack Kirby superhero books. That's why there was still PvP in Jim Mahfood, because, you know, Eric Larson doesn't make Jim Mahfood books, but he knows there's an audience for that and he sees it.
Right.
So, you know, in that sense, there's room for everybody. But, I mean, the what?
No, I'm laughing because, you know, a good publisher has to be able to say, well, I don't like it, but I know there's an audience for it. And what a part of me always chuckles when someone emails me saying, like, hey, Dave, will you critique my strip? Because I want to say to them, look, I would not have called the five biggest webcomics that exist right now. Like, if you had shown them to me when they got started, I would have been like, Penny Arcade, I'm not really a gamer. I don't know. Maybe it'll work. XKCD, I don't know. It's stick figures and it's about math. No, that's not going to work. You know, Dinosaur Comics, well, the images keep repeating. Why would that do well? And so, like, my editorial eye of what else might succeed is not at all – has no relation to what the market has decided will succeed, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's important to remember too when you're asking other cartoonists is like, look, the market is the ultimate decider here, not another cartoonist. I mean, we've all seen other careers that have been gotten huge jump starts. Like, I know four or five cartoonists got huge leaps when like Ryan North linked to them. But for the most part, the work itself is what decides whether or not the market will go, you know? Because like I said before, even if you get the link from Chris, even if Chris says, wow, not only should you not quit, I'm going to make it a major blog post on Chainsaw Suit and Star Slip, and it's going to be a two-minute lead-in on every Blamimation. Well, you know what? If the market decides that the work itself is still not good, then no matter what Chris does to push it, it still won't work. You know?
Well, there's a reason why when Scott and I do the Blamimations, like whenever there is any write-up about it, I push Chainsaw Suit and not Star Slip, because Chainsaw Suit is the same humor. Star Slip is not. Nobody from Blamimations thinks Star Slip is funny. It's not at all the same, and nobody cares, and they leave immediately. So there's no reason. It's completely different for a different audience.
But I guess what I was trying to say is that even if like this person's secret hope of you loving the strip and then pushing it were to come to pass, even that wouldn't work if the market itself doesn't love their work, you know?
Not only that, it's even more complicated than that, because I've gotten emails from people who are fans of both Penny Arcade and PvP, and when I do a comic that more would be a Penny Arcade comic, like when I break my rules a little bit and put something a little bit too blue in it, I'll have people email me and say, no, I don't want that in PvP. I want it in Penny Arcade, but I don't want it here. And my question to them is, well, but if you were just at Penny Arcade and you're okay with that humor there, why are you not okay with it here? And they're like, well, because you're PvP. You're not supposed to have that kind of humor there.
Right.
You know, and I mean...
And it's true to some respect, too. Like, even think about the relationships in your life. You can have the old aunt that you want the sweet old conversations with the old aunt. You don't want her to be like, well, that's why I always say fuck them, you know? Like, you have people, you have art in your life, just like you have people in your life to bring you different moods and different perspectives and different things. And I think that's, people are right when they say that to you, because you've established a certain mood with PvP that's not Penny Arcade, and it's not, you know.
Kind of a fascinating thought.
Well, that's why, like, you know, I like going back to the idea of being family friendly. I got and continue to get a lot of shit about being family friendly online, which you would think wouldn't work. But I continue to hold that the internet is no different than all the channels on your cable spread. That you should have your HBOs and you should have your Nickelodeons and your Disney channels. You know. And the world needs all of them, because there's different moods for life, you know. And there are a lot of readers of mine that want to share the comics with their kids, and I'm happy that that works, and that's part of why I do it, you know. That doesn't mean I don't want Penny Arcade to not exist. You need to be able to have that. As what you need your HBOs and Showtimes as much as you need your other channels, you know.
But no, but think about this: like, if I were to say to you, all right, we're at McDonald's, and I have taken a bite of my hamburger. And now I'm immediately, before I'm done chewing it, I'm taking a sip of my Coke. You'd be like, yeah, okay, so what? But if I were to take my Coke and just dump it on my hamburger and then eat it, you'd be like, oh.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But it's the same thing, technically.
So stop making fun of me.
So let me sip my hamburger in peace.
This whole conversation is just so I could get to that. Listen, when I want a Brundlefly, my Big Mac, I don't want any more shit.
God damn.
Brundlefly. Oh, man, what a reference. Nice.
And not only that, but it like – You're like throughout life, the way you approach something like that and the way you are able to receive something like that is different. Like, for example, if you're 10 years old and your dad says something about your mother in a way that indicates that they're actually two married people. And it's like, ooh, gross. You don't want to see your dad kiss your mom or anything like that. It's like gross when you're 10. But then it's 20 years old and he makes a comment and it's more like, yeah, well, these are two married people. Of course, you know, he's going to kiss mom. You know, it's not a big deal. I don't know why I'm doing the whole kissing mom thing.
We're learning a lot about Brad today.
What are you working on right now, Brad?
I think are we on the couch right now, Brad? Is that what we're doing? We're working something out.
I like dipping my burgers in Coke. I like kissing my mom.
It's like what a little kid would say in the office after having gotten a fight with other kids. I like burgers and Coke, and I like my mom. I don't see why.
Chris, you realize that you and I now have a free pass to talk about whatever we want about right now. Scott and Chris, we've learned too much about Scott and Brad this morning, so now we're gonna I want to wear my underwear outside of my pants. There's no problem with that. I don't know why anybody says that's a problem. I think it's perfectly legitimate. I don't know. I wear my underwear sometimes.
You know, it was just – I knew it was getting too quiet on the other side of the mic. And I'm like, this is really sounding creepy. But wait a minute. What I'm trying to do is bring it around to this. I was trying to gracefully get Scott to start talking about this thing that we talked about yesterday without saying, hey, Scott, tell that story about yesterday. So I'm going to just do it another way. Hey, Scott, tell that story about yesterday when you were talking about how passionate you are about something in your 20s. And then when you're 40, you turn around and you're like, I still care, but I'm not as passionate. Wait a minute, because now I know how to phrase this. And then you said, at what point do I stop caring about anything? In other words, I cared about everything passionately when I was 20. When I'm at 40, I care, but I'm not as passionate. And I realize it's jaded. But it's bullshit.
It's not that you're jaded. It's just that you realize that your level of passion. I was telling Brad that I pulled out some old Billy Joel, and I was listening to Billy Joel. And there's a song that he does called The Angry Young Man. Have you ever heard this song? Anyone?
No,
Sky Mall.
No.
Well, the lyrics go. There's a place in the world for the angry young man with his working class pride and his radical plans. He refuses to bend. He refuses to crawl. And he's always at home with his back to the wall. And he's proud of his cause and the battles he's fought. And he struggles and bleeds as he hangs from his cross. And he likes to be known as the angry young man. And so, it's all about how this guy, his whole life is just these causes, and he's so passionate and he's so angry. And then the bridge, Billy Joel says, I believe I have passed the age of righteousness and righteous rage. I have found that just surviving is a noble fight. I used to have my causes too. I had my pointless point of view. But life goes on no matter who is wrong or right. And I remember that song being an anthem for me in college because I was so passionate about everything. I was passionate about jerking off. I mean, you know, I mean, everything was a cause.
And it's
everything
the only thing that stayed.
And it's not that my convictions went away. It's not that I still don't believe that in certain things passionately. But I just realized that getting angry about it, getting so fired up about it is not going to change anything. So, you know, and I think that's the kind of stuff that leads to, think of the children, you know, the children are going to be fine, relax. And it's not that we can't have this discussion about whether it's too much violence on television, but we just don't need to be so crazy about it.
And well, yeah, so, but it's also like, why is every protest, you know, it's, if you look at like when there's a Parisian march, right, it's always 20 and 30 year olds because they're the ones that are like, I got the fire sure. in the belly, you know?
Yeah.
It's never very... the 60 year old because the 60 year old is like, meh, I want to finish my tea, you know? That's
and they're but also I mean, the yeah. ones that have the time on their hands to show up at something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm now that I'm 40, I'm like, wow, I wonder, I mean, there's still things now that I'm really just angry and fired up about and get in my throat. So will I care about that at 60? Maybe I should start thinking about that. Like, maybe I really shouldn't be that fired up. What am I fired about now that I shouldn't be that fired up about? And when I'm like 80 and 90, will I just be like, ah, nothing, it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
I see now.
I'm passionate about medicine.
But...
I really need more.
Scott goes, I'm trying to figure out which perspective is the best. Where, in other words, I don't want to care about stuff now that I'm going to realize at 80 that doesn't matter. And I go, well, Scott, that's your answer. Nothing matters. When you're 80, you've got such a – if this perspective goes on – you'll realize that nothing matters. And Scott goes, no, that's not, he goes, what did you call it?
I said, at first I thought that the older you got, the more perspective you got, but now the more I hang around with my father and my grandfather, the more I realize it's a parabola. So you hit this sweet spot when you're maybe in your late 60s where everything is completely fucking rational. And you have this moment, I'm like, you got to be, it's probably a day. It's probably like a 22-hour period.
Where you go, ah.
Where, yeah, everything is just perfectly clear. And then you just start down. Because now with my father, I can say, nice day today, huh? And he's like, not if Obama has his way. You know. And my grandmother can miss, I could say, you know, oh my, look, this is the most people that in our original family that have been gathered together in one dinner for years. Isn't that amazing? And she can say, why is there no gravy boat? You can't just serve gravy in a Pyrex dish. And, you know, and then she, you know, she's not seeing any big picture because she's just like, can you imagine no gravy boat?
And it starts when you're 6 years old and you're full of irrational passion, and then you're 20 and you've got rational passion, and then you get to ration, and then you're right back to being 80 years old at irrational passion.
Well, so let me ask you guys, though, because this is important. When do I stop wetting my pants?
I was remember in those 22 of wombat.
My bed all the
well,
time.
You know what? I think the best lesson we can learn here is actually from Billy Joel. Like, you know, you were... No, listen.
That's
you
not go, cool, dude. I really go, like Billy Joel.
You go from being an angry young man, and then you realize that your passions don't matter, and then you just start drinking. I think that's the way to go.
I thought you were going to say working too hard can give you a heart attack.
No, you went with the lyric approach. I went with the actual sad real life approach.
I was waiting for you to say first you start an angry young man, then you become a piano man, and then you become an uncle, and that surgery is expensive.
And you become exactly.
Guys, Allentown. I don't know. But thanks for mocking my love for.
Oh, I wasn't mocking. I just opportunity.
No, it's very funny.
So I kind of have to wrap it up here
to
in a minute.
Me.
But,
I go to extremes.
Oh, but bum 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 bum. You know what? Listen, Scott. You know as good as well as I do that I didn't start that fire. So don't throw it at me.
You guys are all bullshit because I know you're all in front of your computers and you pulled up the Billy Joel discography and I can't
keep
up.
I know it by heart, man. All right, you had to be a big shot, huh, Brad?
Oh yeah. Well,
Captain Jack.
That's
tonight.
What happens being in this Cold Spring Harbor.
Listen, you guys are all in glass houses. I don't want to hear anything about it.
That's an album name.
You know but what? I don't know Billy Joel because he's terrible. I'm sorry. Why don't we start quoting Wham lyrics while we're at it?
I know. There's so many other bands that I know better than Billy Joel.
Dave, you'll always be my uptown girl.
Oh, I'll take that.
Guys, this has been going on for the longest time. I think we should.
All right, look, it has been going on for the longest time. It's been an hour. Let's stop now while we can. I feel a lot of pressure.
Oh God! Ah, listen. Let's just keep remarrying and drink more and more and more.
Yeah, absolutely.
There you go. The perfect lesson.
All right. Well.
Well, guys. Hey, just to let you know, guys, I'm at my fourth update, and I've won the podcast award for best podcast.
I won the most consistent podcast.
We're the podcastiest, I hear anyway. So
you know what? I think let me put a quick button on that subject. The idea that like we make fun of people who are like, I hit strip number 50. I mean that's we go like, all right, big deal. Try strip 5,000. But that is a personal benchmark and good for you. But all that matters to your audience is where's 51? Where's 52? That's what you need to focus on. Who cares 50? Who cares 100? You get above, 250, you stop counting.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So don't give up, guy who wrote me.
No, but yeah. Yeah, you're right though. To put balance on that, there is value in landmarks like that. But ultimately, I think you hit it on the head, Chris. The ultimate value of that landmark is just to you. You know,
it's for you. Yeah, you can't write a press release that says number 50 is here. It's okay. I mean, it's nothing to sneeze at. It was a big deal when I did it. Mm-hmm.
I think your response to him should just be an ellipsis.
No, you know what you should do,
like,
Chris?
Take
a lesson from my Irish grandfather and answer his question with a question. If he's like, hey, Chris, do you think I should quit? You should answer him back, do you think I should quit? And then just see what his response might be. Just be like,
do you want to quit? Well, I mean, I'm not sure. Should I? Are you feeling this way?
Use listen techniques. I hear what you're saying. You're saying you feel like you're going to quit. Yes, what should I do? You're wondering what I would tell you to do.
You're just actively listening. All right, so what I'm hearing you saying is that you want to quit. No, I'm asking you if you should quit. No, but by asking that question, what I'm hearing is...
About the fifth email, tell them your time is up and that you'll bill them $100 for the session.
That's right.
Now that's
that's a good button on this show, gents.
All right. And scene.
Captain Jack.
Wow.